Salud,
peace,
brother.
Peace, peace. Salud. Man, one time, man. It's great to see y'all boys.
Sweet Life, Los Angeles, California. Rams Stadium. Chargers too, right?
Chargers too. Chargers too, you know.
It's the Rams Stadium. It's the Rams Stadium.
It is Rams House, for sure.
Yo, man, how y'all feeling? What's going on?
Man, happy to be here, brother. Happy to be here with y'all.
The legend, Diz.
Nah, man.
The legend, AJ.
Congratulations on the exhibit.
Appreciate you, man.
That is, you curated a whole stadium.
yeah, it's
stadium
still
status.
It's still sinking in. You know, it's
it's
been an incredible experience. You know, we brought the Kinsey African American Art and History Collection here to SoFi Stadium. It's the first art exhibition to ever be on display here at this incredible venue. And we got, you know, the whole second level essentially. And it's about us. It's about Black folks. It's about the incredible contributions of our people through the lens of, you know, all aspects of humanity, you know, and creativity. And to be able to share that on this stage is, like I said, it's still sinking in. It's pretty incredible.
Your parents, you guys are all a part of this. This is a collective journey.
Yeah, this is a family. This is a family business, a labor of love. Really, you know, what I say is something that is ordering our steps. You know, it's something that wakes us up in the morning and continues to evolve in incredible, you know, natural ways, as well as, I mean, even as evidenced right here, you know what I mean?
Okay.
How it brought us all together from, you know what I mean, that have been down for so long and have been on these different journeys. So it's just been an absolute beautiful experience to do this with my mother and father and to share this. You know, it's our family, a Black family sharing with the Black family, you know, and it's been dope.
When did your parents start collecting art? Like, and did it start as like a hobby, or was it your father, your mother? Like, what was that journey like?
It's been over 40 years, or probably over 50 at this point. They just celebrated 55 years of marriage recently. Yeah. It's pretty serious. And they've been really purposeful. You know, they moved out to LA from Florida after meeting in college at Florida A&M University in 1967. They had $26 in their pocket and came out here and made a life, you know, worked together, set a plan, and just meticulously went about it, you know, and art was part of that. So the art and travel. So they started traveling around the country. My father actually was one of the first Black park rangers with the National Park Service. So 1966, he integrated the Grand Canyon. He and his best friend, Nick Walker. So
he did what?
He integrated the Grand Canyon with the National
Park
Service.
What does that mean? Like,
He was a park ranger. He was a park ranger. One of the first Black park rangers. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So that was his first time out of Florida, first time on a plane, the whole thing. But what it did was it gave him the confidence to, you know, when an opportunity came for Los Angeles, it gave him the confidence to come to LA. So he and my mom embarked on this journey. They got away from the South, you know, all of the incredibly tense and dangerous times that was. And they came out here on their own where they had to rely on each other. You know what I mean? And that's what they did. But art was part of that journey. So they would be traveling to national parks, as kind of started by my mother and father. I mean, by my father, excuse me. And they would collect like indigenous works or cultural artifacts, you know, things like that. And then they started becoming more knowledgeable around Black art and the Black arts community here in LA.
Okay.
So they you know, kind of began collecting prints and things like that, befriending different artists, Ernie Barnes being one of them. And as my father moved through the ranks in corporate America at Xerox, and my parents were able to travel more and all of that, it just expanded their understanding and their quest, you know, to document and to appreciate culture. But it wasn't until I came around that, you know, I had that third grade history report, mm-hmm. like family history report that, mm-hmm. that most people, you know, most kids have at that young age. And mm-hmm. I had a challenging time in terms of like interviewing my grandparents and family elders and the whole thing on family history. But we can only go back a few generations, you know what I mean? And when I got back to school, my classmates could go back for centuries, you know what I mean? And for me, that was like devastating. I just had a lot of questions I felt lesser than, you know? I felt inadequate and I was confused. I came back home to my mother and father with that.
Just, yeah. I don't want to stop you, but to that point, in schools now, there's this debate of, what is it?
The new critical race theory.
The race theory and all of that.
Yeah.
We understand, we have to understand that the lack of information about us, people that look like us in the schools, actually perpetuates stereotypes.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Like, so the more that people hear your story, your family story, right? Not only is it inspiring to people who look like us, but it's inspiring to everyone.
That's it. That's it.
Your dad was a park ranger. I'm keeping 100. I don't know no black pops as a park ranger.
Right.
I've never even heard of no
that
shit like that.
Integrated the Grand Canyon.
Let's take the next step.
That's
so,
wild.
You know, our narratives are so important.
Man,
they're
come on.
So important.
Yeah.
AJ. Speaking of that, what is your, where are you, your ethnicity, where are you originally from? And just like, just chop it with us about y'all's relationship, but where you're sitting right now and like how we all get to this point.
I was actually born in Detroit. My mom's an Indian immigrant. And she moved here to like visit America, hasn't been back since 40 years, came on like a field trip, kind of visited a friend and just never left. Mm. So, you know, I was born in Detroit. Didn't, you know, my mom and dad split up before I could remember. My earliest memories were running around here, you know, all around LA. You know, my mom was a hustler. I'm an only child, single parent. My grandmother moved here to kind of help raise me when her only daughter was out here kind of solo. And, you know, she was an entrepreneur. She did whatever she had to do to make ends meet. And, you know, she was a hustler. I remember her starting a business. My earliest memories were in our one bedroom apartment down the street. And she, you know, took out an ad. My uncle used to ship her Bollywood movies, and she used to rent them out to people that wanted to watch them. She took out an ad in the Yellow Pages and called herself the Bollywood Blockbuster.
Wow.
So, like, my earliest memories were, like, helping her kind of figure all that out. So I watched, like, the plight of, like, an immigrant, small business owner, a woman, color in the 80s, kind of build that up. So that's all I knew growing up. But then one thing that she always valued was education. So even though we were kind of slowly progressing, and I saw the power that entrepreneurship had to kind of change the trajectory of like a family's life. I grew up in mostly, you know, communities, you know, black and brown communities around LA. So it was like the closest thing I could kind of identify with. I remember she always put me in like, that was the thing she'd always splurge on, was a good school. So that I'd be, you know, education is just something that was very valuable to her, even though she didn't really know much. So, you know, to your point about race theory though, I think that, you know, a lot of the schools I went to had a lot of white people. So for me, in my earliest memories, I just wished I was white. White was right. That's what a lot of immigrants believe that, like, that's like the aspirational kind of thing. So, but it was interesting because, like, I'd come home and that's not where I lived. I took the bus to school. I didn't have a driver drop me off, you know? So it's like the juxtaposition of those two worlds. So it's kind of like the foundation of all my shit.
So were you bus too?
The hustle too, man.
Real quick though, so at an early age, you talk about your mom's entrepreneur spirit, right? Did that send you in the trajectory you are now at an early age where you're like, I want to be an entrepreneur? Like, this is all I know. This is what I'm surrounded. This is
all you know, right? Yeah. Like, you're in the environment during your formative years. That's what you see. Yeah. So people have parents that are doctors. This might want to be a doctor, you know, or like some type of influence. So for me, it was like, I never had any particular interest other than making shit that people wanted. So whether it was like my first venture was like going to Smart and Final and buying a bunch of Sour Belts and Airheads and selling them out of my locker in first grade, to just gradually, you know, I was like, you know, I lived where I lived, but I knew how to like go to the wholesale fashion district or the electronic district downtown and then just sell shit at school, you know, like out of the trunk of the car. So it was always kind of like for me, the high always just came off of like the sale and finding a way to kind of create some value. So like, you know, it's fun. It's like creating things that people want, and then how that kind of evolved.
So, and then just talking about like the juxtaposition of like you said, you went to school, you know, affluent school with surrounded by, you know, white kids that, you know, were privileged and those things. But then you go back to what your reality was at the time. Like, I think talking about like how you mentally, you know, as a kid growing up, you know, how that affects you. You know, I think a lot of people, even adults, go through that where they're like, their circumstances, the situation may be one thing, but they have to go and perform and put on. And like, how did you deal with that growing up, knowing like, it's almost like two lives, like you're going to school like that, but then your reality is that, like, how did that play a part in?
I would say that, you know, kind of like, especially being an only child, not really having like an older or younger, nothing was really relative like in my household. So it was like, the ability to, you know, kind of gives you the ability to adapt if you choose to. So you kind of understand like the vocabulary in this setting versus how people talk and explain things. And like, you know, kind of teaches for me, like kind of gave you the ability to act like you've been there before, wherever there was, you know? So like for better or worse, because like as we get older, as we become men, as we become fathers, and you start to like really realize your whole purpose is to like, the ultimate measure of success is being comfortable in your own skin and who you are, wherever it is that you go. And that's the journey, right? It's like whatever, and how it's a moving target. So it's like, to answer your question, yeah, it creates a lot of all of that, but then the imposter syndrome that you have to constantly sift through. You know, I've been fortunate enough to be in some amazing rooms and some amazing company and have some amazing conversations, and always have that voice in the back of, you know, like, that you don't belong here.
Right. Do I belong
here?
They're
going to catch up. They're going to find out.
And yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Crazy.
But also that fuels creation,
yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
You know, it's like that. So it's like balancing out like that fear, and then just, you know. Anyway, I don't know how we got here.
Yeah. No, but listen. Left to your own vices, right? Left to your circumstances.
Yeah.
And leaning into those circumstances, then you find your voice. And I think that's. I know you, you know, I know you as an MC, first of all. The music journey.
One of the greatest.
Man, right? LA, yeah, like, right? for real.
I'm a fan, bro. I still listen to that Christian Castle's mixtape. Yeah.
And truly yours is
real
still
talk.
One of my favorites.
Come on,
thank
real
you,
talk.
Man. Thank you, man. Thank
real
you.
Real talk. A,
man, but even talking about that.
Another life.
Like, again, like, we've all known each other for, you know, and I think we'll dive into, like, how we all met each other.
Sure.
But
yeah.
I met, you know, Diz. We were both in the street where, you know, we were both MCs, you know, this is early 2000s. And, you know, talk about like the pivot of like, you know, you being an MC, we're working in streetwear at the height of streetwear. Like, right. When I talk to people about it, I'm like, we were at the infusion of like,
yeah, it was the core.
What was really going on
when
here.
Fairfax was popping.
It was the core.
Built it, right?
Yeah. For real. Absolutely. You know, stop playing.
Man. But
tell your story.
I want to know when the mic became secondary to this journey, or was it time in between? Like, talk about like that. You know, that space.
All these intersections.
Absolutely, you know, and it continues to evolve. You know,
okay.
But for me, in a similar way as AJ, but the converse approach. Like, I grew up in affluent neighborhoods, right?
Right.
And I grew up with an imposter syndrome there.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Like, I don't belong here.
Like, I don't belong here. There's not, what I experienced in my home wasn't represented outward, you know what I mean, in the world around me, even my classmates, da 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 da. So I always was trying to figure out how I fit from the other angle, you know what I mean? But also where I fit as far as my blackness and my brothers that were coming on buses, that I was going to, you know, that I was going to their neighborhoods over the weekend, da 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 da. And also my family, all over the country, you know, that come from different circumstances, and that,
okay,
and the experiences that provided for me, that I, you know, I think really made me a well-rounded person. You know, that coupled with travel, you know what I mean, and those things. But I've always been observant. I've always been someone who has, you know, in one way or another, I think trusted the process and followed my heart. You know, so back to the entrepreneurial thing. Like, my father, while he worked at Xerox, he retired very young. He retired at 46. And that was through that partnership of my mother and father and saving and the whole thing. But I asked my father then, like, why are you retiring right now? And he told me, because it'll never be, Xerox will never be Kinsey and Son, right? It'll never be Kinsey and Son. And that stuck with me. So my entire, you know, my teenage years into my adulthood has been about living on my own terms and creating my own destiny, and that's what's led to now. But music was one of my first loves. It's what pulled me in, and it was the language I speak the most fluently. Mm. You know what I mean? So how can I share my experiences, my outlook, my perspective, you know, in a way that touches, you know, that encompasses all of my being? You know what I mean? And that's that was my easiest way to express it, you know, and show up authentically in a way that I identify with, you know what I mean? How to blend it. Hip hop, skateboarding, all of these things are these convergences of culture. You know, they are a shared experience while also being individual. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? So that was what it always was for me, was connecting with the outside world through and bringing my own vantage point to add on. You know what I mean? And music just was always the most natural and the thing that I still gravitate to first. But what it's evolved into now, and I've kind of come to see what I do now as an evolution of that. Instead, I'm not on the stage.
Telling stories.
It's telling stories.
It's still telling stories.
It's showing up. It's showing up in an authentic way, so that more and more people gravitate towards it. You know what I mean? And get the message. You know. And also, it is me. I'm still on stage. You know what I mean? I'm still on stage. I'm still speaking to folks and sharing how I see things. You know. And so it's fulfilled. It's still fulfilling in that way.
AJ, you have recently. Slauson and Co. And how I'm segueing is because you're sharing the stage. Actually, you're building stages for people. You're building infrastructure and support systems, and it's advocacy at its highest level. You know what I mean? Disenfranchised people getting the opportunity who haven't, you know, they don't get the loans. We're not getting the loans, and if we are getting the loans, We're in trouble by the you know what I mean? Like, so why that? Why, like, what brought you to that place? Cause the other thing, sorry, you've also hashtag Lunchbag, founder, creator. So like your whole thing is advocacy, and it's beautiful that in a way you've turned that, I don't want to say into a business, it's just what you do, and it's allowed you to sustain and take care of your family and all of this other kind of stuff. But like, why that path? Like, how, why building stages for everybody else?
I mean, to piggyback on what you were saying, it's all for me, it's all the same shit,
right?
Like, it's all, you're telling a story. It's like, how does that story manifest? Whether it's, you know, some kind of like movement-based philanthropy or food and beverage retail and hospitality, or deploying capital into entrepreneurs that, you know, deserve to have those, you know, resources. So for me, it's like, you know, it's easy for me. I've known you for over 10 years. I've known all you guys forever. But like, from where we met, like from being a fan, like actual fan, I'm not actually like a fan of a lot of people, like their art and their talent. Like I can separate that. But like to know you on a personal level, and now to hear where your like legacy started with your parents and with like how they kind of got together and like, on some Bonnie and Clyde shit almost.
Yeah,
like
flipping
the way. And build a legacy, right? That's what you're talking about. Like, so for me, it was like I didn't come from a big family. Like I had a whole half of my family that I just didn't know because they weren't part of my life. And then my other ones was like all half, so I didn't ever felt like kind of connected. So as I kind of like viewed myself as a creator of whatever is in the middle, it's all the same. Like, you know, you start to realize the power that could have on like the trajectory of your life. And then as I kind of got further and was fortunate enough to meet, you know, affluent people or successful people, however you define success, whether it's monetary or having created some kind of value that the world didn't know how it couldn't live without before, you kind of get that perspective. And for me, like, it started on my personal, I guess, mental health journey, in terms of like, I think we're all like in this overstimulated world where there's all this pressure that we've never existed before, because it's coming from every angle.
Yep.
And like, as I was kind of like searching, I guess, I have this theory around like men specifically, 28 is like a significant year for some reason. I don't think this is like a popular thing, but whenever I talk to somebody that's like willing to go down that path and really try to like lift up the hood on why you're here. Like, not every
28?
28 feels like that's where
that's real shit.
Where you
actually
can like, you know, open up the can of worms of like why you're here. And then that hero's journey that you kind of go on. So for me, it was just like, you know, like bring a hashtag lunch bag. That for me was a prescription by a therapist for me to go out and volunteer to go deal with some shit that I was going through personally or professionally that had some uncertainty or some kind of significance that I might have overblown in proportion. But it gave me the perspective to know that we're all here to like serve each other. And if everybody adopts that like service-driven mindset, then incrementally and relentlessly, and if I can find a way to contribute to being cool, to just be kinder, and like show that you could be successful, you could earn a comfortable living. Like it's it's a long game, but it's like you talk about legacy. Like for me, like I have insecurity around because I didn't have a dad. So my I have two kids now. I'm married. I have two kids. Objectively, I'm a phenomenal father. I don't always feel that way because like, am I doing it right? You know, like it's like you. I didn't really feel like a man until I had a son. Right. You know, so, and my son was born on Father's Day, which is crazy. But
what's his name?
His name is Ram.
All right.
R-A-M with a little line over.
Bless
it. I like lines. Like tildes and shit.
Blessings.
But yeah, so, but I don't know. So for me, as I kind of went through the process, and now with like Slauson & Co., you know, I was fortunate enough to, in a previous life, start a firm with my brothers over at Queensbridge with Nas and Ant and Dee and Anand, and we built. Like, that was my kind of foray into, like, this world of, like, venture capital and technology. And you're like, whoa, people just give people money for, like, ideas, and they, like, might not even work? Like, that's wild. I'm like, the people that I know come from places where they don't have a lot and just don't know that these resources exist. Right. I'm like, it's my job to bridge that gap of authenticity and access. And then also, you know, it's a huge financial opportunity. Sure. I'm basically with this firm, which is rooted in this idea of economic inclusion. So we intentionally seek out people that have historically been overlooked by these pools of capital and these like geographic reasons. My bet is that innovation exists outside of white men in six cities. I'm not a genius. It's like it's obvious. It's like if you can kind of create the scaffolding, to your point, or build a stage, everybody wins.
There you go.
And, you know, you might get to go to heaven or some shit.
Yeah,
we might all get to go.
Nah, you know, there's a saying that you can do good and do well too. You know what I mean?
Ooh, wait, and say it again.
You can do good and do well too. You
know what I mean? We got a lot of bars.
Because I feel like there's always been this misconception of like, if you have wealth or things, and you're not able to give back, like there's a conflicting.
Or you got to do bad. I had an attorney. He's a dear friend of mine, actually. I don't want to, but at one point he said to me, I was looking at the landscape and I was like, look at this guy and look at this guy. And I was like, in my humble opinion, I don't know how quality they are as human beings, mm-hmm. like quality humans. Mm-hmm. And that's not for me to judge, but I had certain interactions. I was like, is that quality? He was like, well, look, at the end of the day, you might have to do a little bad to get to where you are. And I'm like, nah, I'm not, I can't do that. I can't be congruent with that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I feel like we are truly here. We're here to advocate for each other.
There's 170 religions in the world, and they only have one thing in common. Literally, because everything else, by default, we're all going to hell because we don't believe, you know. But there's one thing that 170 religions have.
I'm going drinking cranberry juice.
And it is, you know, to help your fellow man or woman, mm-hmm.
there you
right?
Go.
Like lift up everything around you. So yeah. It's you know, like you might get popped for spreading that too far and wide.
Right.
So that's why we had to democratize access to the message. Right.
And I think one of the things that, you know, we want to do, you know, one of the reasons we began this journey is to almost like not replace the gatekeeper or the middleman, but, you know, show our culture that it's okay. You know, we don't have to rah, rah, rah all the time. We can give each other tangible tools to go out and succeed, because we talked about it a little bit earlier. I think we have a tendency when we get a little, we want to hold on to it so tight because we feel like if that may go away.
Right.
You know, and
there's historical reasons for that as well.
You know, you talked about like the venture capitalists and, you know, all those finance. How do like people in the hood and people who don't have access to those things, how do they find out about, like, and you too, Diz, like, how do they find out about how to get involved and, like, art, you know, curation, and how does somebody go about trying to find funds, you know, for
things raise their hand, on, yeah, right? To like, say, AJ, I need your help.
You got to create a way in for people, right? Like with what you do, like you create a way in for people. Like there's this thing that exists, but it has to. You have to. It takes somebody that has access to it to create a way in for other people. Always. That's everything. That's like all of humanity. So it's like, you know, you have to move with intention. Like the work that you're doing, like the fact that your parents came from where they came from, the journey that they went on, the resources that they amassed, the collection that they create, the fact that you get to now share that on the biggest stage in the world, you know, like that's wild. So it's like, the way in is like you see people like you that are doing
that's it. That's
right.
It.
That's like phase one. And that's, I feel like that you're starting to see people, all kind of representation, all kind of women and people of power, black people, brown people, people that just aren't the ones that are historically
highlighted,
you know, or
highlight,
spotlight, right? So it's like that's where it starts. But now you're starting to see enough people that are in, and it's like it's like what you do with art education is what we're doing. We have an accelerator. Slauson & Co. is not a nonprofit. Right. We're not an impact fund. Our scorecard is cash on cash returns. Our whole thing is, we're gonna outperform everybody, where to the point where other people are gonna take notice with way deeper pockets and resources than ours, and we'll see an opportunity to help all ships rise. So we're doing things like, we created a program called Friends and Family, which is a nonprofit accelerator that's a partnership with a nonprofit, because we realize the limitations that we have as like a relatively small $75 million fund, but we realize that the people that have invested in us are invested in our mission and have, you know, may have other, you know, resources that they want to. So we created a program where we put out an APB to entrepreneurs in any industry across the country, ended up getting like 600 applications, landed on 20 people. Everybody got on average a $25,000 non-dilutive cash grant, which is their friends and family round, because the entrepreneurs that we intentionally seek out, and we invest inclusively, you know, like we're reflective of the world, but the people that we're talking about may not necessarily have a friend or a family member that says, hey, why don't you go take 6 months and a year off? Here's like $100,000 to go figure it out. That's not a, you know, you just need to kind of, and then like, we're fortunate to have a network of people that want to contribute and lend their skill set. So it's, I love the way you framed it. It's like building the stage. More and more people doing that is, you know, it creates more people to be able to like know that they can too.
It's about access and exposure, you know what I mean? Like, I mean, that's what we're both, you know, about in these different ways, but that all connect back. I mean, it, you know, starting with the core, you know, you have to see it to be it and to be able to even know that it's possible. And so, like, the work that we do in sharing African-American history and creative culture is all about illuminating these examples of brilliance, right? Not simply to share it in that way, but the power that it harnesses for all that experience, right? Even me growing up in my household with a lot of this, you know, on the walls and everything else, it wasn't until I sat with it and had time through my own filter and lens and time and space that I was able to be like, to feel the empowerment that comes with it, right? Mm-hmm. And the possibility that comes with it, right? Because you have to have that through, everything is always deciphered through your experiences and your perspective. And once that's expanded, then you wind up getting really excited about your life, right? And you make different decisions about your life and all of those things. But it all comes from being able to relate to the people that are presenting it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And the information in terms of the multifaceted way. I mean, nobody learns the same way, right? Mm-hmm. Everybody, there's all these different ways in which people are impacted. You know, and which young people are impacted, all these different things. So our work has always been about how to share these different points. Some are painful, but how do we always uncover the strength and the beauty underneath it, right? And the contribution, you know, in terms of if they did it, I could do it too.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
So you talk about like, you know, the pain sometimes in the journey, there's always those things in the journey. You don't have to dive into what, but in the past years or growing up in your adult life, you know, something that really rocked you to your core, what was it that helped you pick up and continue to move forward? Because I think everybody, you know, it takes these things in differently, right? Some people can't rebound from it.
Right.
Some people it takes years. Some people it take, there's a defining moment, but like you guys personally, something that may have rocked you to your core, that made you, that really shook your foundation, what were some things that helped you get through that?
You, because you were talking about your mental health journey. Yeah. I'm very, because I've, you know, I've dealt with a couple of things myself, so yeah. I'm very interested to hear how, what's the North Star? What's that?
Yeah.
What's the what do you call it? Off of the ocean with the you know,
lighthouse.
The lighthouse.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What was your lighthouse? What got you swimming back to shore?
I've had so for me it was like right around when I was 28.
Okay.
I had five friends in five consecutive years take their own life. And they were all people that I shared a lot of, like, we all have similar personality traits. So you know what I mean? And it was like, and it was something that, like, you know, like mental health is something that runs deeply in my family. So it's something that I've like kind of always kind of around. And I think that, you know, part of like my journey towards like he, like that was part of the things that I was just like, well, is this normal? Like, you know, this the amount of, and like knowing that those are thoughts that a lot of people,
yeah,
you know, have, and it's normal and it's human, but it also can make you feel a little disconnected and kind of go in. And I think that, you know, for me, whenever I talk about today at 38, so 10 years, like what I would actually kind of like measure like my progress, still painful, but it gets a little easier. But I think for me, whenever I talk about how I move, it's like, it's all, you know, like whatever I can do to remember to be grateful and be present. These are not groundbreaking things to really, but it's like, that's the thing that I'm constantly working on and a place to kind of get to. So for me, I always talk about how giving has given me everything that I've got, everything in my life, every opportunity, everything that I get to wake up.
Has given you everything that you have.
Exactly. And it's idea, and this is, you know, you wrap the medicine in the candy, whether it's through a fun experience or through a volunteer opportunity or a boring financial services firm that we're trying to like change the mold around. It's this idea of achieving a service-based mentality and realizing how much more rewarding it is for you selfishly. Like, there's no such thing as like true altruism, and that's okay if more people adopted that. You know, like that's my daily thing that I wake up, like, how do we mind fuck the world to be nicer to each other and realize that it's not mutually exclusive to be, you know, like. And I feel like that's what's exciting, especially after what we just came off of with this whole pandemic shit, right? Like, everybody's head is busted wide open, and then we're all kind of scrambling back to doing what we were doing before, you know, like, no. So we talk about this idea of like a renaissance that's happening, call it an emotional revolution, call it a work, adopt, like, remote work, whatever, everything is wide open, and we get to recreate it. Yeah. So, like, why recreate the whack shit that didn't work?
Right. <that's laughs> evolution is real. We have a choice. We have a choice in terms of updating, you know, our systems, you know what I mean? And shedding the things that no longer serve us in the right way. We have that choice individually, we have that choice as a society. Mm-hmm. We have that choice as a government, you know what I mean? All of these things, you know, I always have questioned those. I've always questioned how, you know, I mean, if we're speaking about the government, how can you have these practices that, and speak to this excellence, right? But have these practices that don't actually serve that don't benefit that excellence. You know, how do you marginalize your citizens? You know what I mean? How do you stick to a constitution that has a segment that speaks to a population when that was considered to be subhuman? You know what I mean? Like, how do you update those things? How do you update the gun laws to reflect automatic weapons versus muskets? You know what I mean? That type of stuff. We have a choice, and we have a power to change it.
Yeah.
But we just don't. You know, and those types of things. You know, for me, I've had a very close relationship with death as well, you know, growing up in a lot of different ways. I mean, from 8 years old, my best friend was hit by a car right in front of my face, riding his bike, you know what I mean? And from then on, my uncle, I was at it, you know, saw him take his last breaths, you know, and moving on from there. Friends, you know, growing up out in the war zone out here in the 90s, you know, lot of brothers getting gunned down, you know, both in the game and not, you know, all of that, man, to where I thought that was my fate as well. I thought that was, you know, I mean, as black men, as black boys, we
were buying into that.
You buy into it. You ascribe to this identity. You ascribe to this rite of passage almost, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's gonna be death in jail.
I gotta spend a couple months in there.
That's it, right?
Even if not, I'm not official.
You know what I mean? Those types of things.
For
real. It's real. And
like, I gotta pass through.
That struggle, you know? And again, back to like what I was talking about earlier in terms of trying to figure out where I fit, I ran towards a path that I thought was being black, you know what I mean? In a very limited sense. And it put me, you know, in a lot of ways, I shouldn't be here because so many of my brothers aren't. And I spent my 25th birthday in rehab, right? Wow. I had my 25th birthday in rehab for weed. I was an extreme weed head, right? Yeah. Like to where I was damaging relationships.
Smoke,
what's that?
You could smoke.
Yeah. No. Look, I got it all in a good place now.
Yeah.
But at that age, you know, well, first off, I started smoking when I was 11 years old. Ooh. You know what I mean? And I went from smoking with people to smoking individually by the time I was in high school. You know what I mean? Personals, you know, on the way to school. You know what I mean? And then on and on, you know what I mean? To where by the time I was 24, 25, I had checked out on life. You know what I mean? And I had checked out on my family, everything else. And while I was there, I learned so much about behavior, about people, places, and things.
At the rehab. Okay.
Because I saw that while I thought my shit was bad, I saw that it could be way worse. Mm-hmm. Everybody has their bottom, right? Mm-hmm. But also, like, I spent 30 days there, and I was in a rush to get back to my life. And I said that to one of the counselors. I need to get back to my life. And he was like, what are you talking about? This is your life. And that changed everything for me when I realized that, right? This is your life. I mean, even now when we're in the pandemic, everybody talking about getting back to it. Come on.
This is it.
And you have power within that.
To shape what it is and shape what your experience is
and how you come out of it on the other side. And I think all of us can test, you know, are a testament to, you know, harnessing that power, you know what I mean, and utilizing it and expressing creativity and love throughout all of it, these challenges, to where we come out in a way that we're evolved and better for it.
Cherry Cola, that Bud Light Seltzer, hard soda.
Yep.
Pre-game ritual.
That's your one, huh?
That's my thing. Whether I'm going to the game or I'm going to barbecue with the fam, that is a necessity.
All right. I got to try that one. But for me, though, it's from the Retro Tie-Dye Variety Pack, the Cherry Limeade. Stop playing with me. It's sweet. Got the cherry taste. Got a little bit of hint of the lime, too. Just all the things that I like. We going to the festival. I'm popping open the trunk. The best part about it is there's no beer in it. I'm not a beer drinker, so for me, it works out perfectly. Just a great tasting seltzer. A bunch of flavors. They got the classic cola. They got the cherry cola. The orange soda. The citrus soda. For me, it's the citrus soda. But which one are you rocking with?
Man, it's a classic cola. I actually like to use it as a mixer, especially when I'm out with the homies in the RVs on the beach during the summer.
That's what's up. That sounds like a real summertime vibe. With the Bud Light Seltzer Hard Soda, in the summertime, for me, it's barbecuing and watching the fight. Best ways for me to enjoy and kick back and have a good time.
That's right. To find a retailer who delivers right to your door, head over to BudLight.com to learn more. Bud Light Seltzer, the loudest flavors ever. Enjoy responsibly. Messaging for the 21 and over.
What I do like about, I mean, I think the most beautiful thing about the pandemic is it stripped everything down. It put everybody on this playing field. And it also made you realize the things you don't necessarily need in life, right?
Yeah.
Like, it showed you where you really should be leaning into. And I like what you said, like, and what I get a testament of is that everybody here does everything for love or service. And that's the foundation of it, right? Because when you do it that way, that's what the connection is. You know, I was telling somebody earlier, and when you sit down with anybody, it doesn't matter where they're from, what city, what state, what country, if you sit down and speak to somebody long enough, you'll find commonalities.
Absolutely.
Over time, we have taken the human condition out of it.
Yeah.
And I think with the pandemic, it's reset in a sense, but a lot of people are so in a rush to be like you said, we can go back to what it was. It's like, no, let's reshape a better,
right? A better, you don't need to go back.
You don't have to
this
go back.
This is an opportunity.
Because what it was, what it was, wasn't working.
Right.
What it was wasn't healthy.
Right.
You know, right. To Chief's point, like, I remember the first part of the pandemic being in the house, and I'm like, yo, I got all these clothes. I do not wear none of this shit.
Same jeans.
I was in the, yo, I was in the same couple of white t-shirts, because you could be, you know what I mean? You on Zoom, the meetings were on Zoom. I was like, I don't need all this shit. I don't need these shoes. I don't need all this. Because at you know, there was a point where when you're, you know, when we're out in the world, it's like, yo, I got this meeting. I got to look like this, or I'm going to be around these people. I better, you know what I mean? It's this whole thing, like, that we create, and it creates a huge amount of pressure. We're almost putting ourselves in like junior high and elementary again, right? And it's like,
yeah, that's a good
whether point. It's about my clothing, you know what I mean? I remember when I was happy when they said, hey, you guys need to wear uniforms in school. Because I was like, yo, that's going to alleviate a lot of pressure.
My shoes.
It's when you're poor. Because it made everybody made everybody equal.
Yeah.
It made everybody equal. You know what I'm saying? And that's the thing that we have to, those are the things that we have to remember even right now. Like, every day, get up and create something that allows everybody to come to the table.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
Allows everybody to come to the table. Like, does not alienate anyone. Right. Like, what can we do? And so for Chief and I, that's why, you know, we created the Sweet Life Podcast to help people, you know, extrapolate from these conversations with esteemed, and I'm gonna call y'all what y'all are. Y'all are esteemed kings.
I'm gonna call you right back.
No, but I'm saying you I'm a fan of your. So Brooke Kankar, who is AJ and I's mutual friend and a friend of yours, introduced me to AJ years ago.
Yeah.
She's like, yo, I met this guy. Me and Brooke, super tight. I met this guy, AJ, because Brooke was trying to do music. We won't talk about the music beat.
We don't talk about the music.
Let's not talk about the music.
Oh, man. Shout out to Brooke.
But shout out to B. But AJ was just like, he was there for her, and he was their conversations, because she would share with me, like, yo, he enlightened me in this way. You know what I mean? And that's always been with you. Like,
man.
I remember meeting him at, the, you know, when it was just a store for, what do you call it, skateboard trucks. And you were in there every day, but his energy was amazing. We would have these long conversations, but these conversations would be, again, steeped and rooted in, yo, how can we make things better?
Always.
Always. So I say to you guys, like, continue on this path, man. Continue to shape and help people. And speaking of that, like Hilltop, again, that's another thing where it's those kind of coffee shops, which were probably here, I would assume, in the Renaissance period, right, of LA and New York. You and your partners have brought those back. And it's, again, it's another stage for people that are affluent, not only financial, but affluent here, to come and congregate. How did you even get into that? How you and Issa, how'd that partnership come about?
So yeah, I mean, it's all, again, it kind of goes back to the idea of, like, you build things, looking backwards, you can kind of see where all the dots connect. So like my partner Yoni and I actually met.
Okay.
We owned a spot on Melrose for, you know, been there for 12 years, called The Parlor. It's
kind of
like an institution in terms of, like, a sports bar vibe, like, gathering space, and something that, you know, started, you know, in our mid-20s is kind of like a scratch and an itch that we had. I didn't have any hospitality aspirations, but it was fun, right?
I want to tell you, I watched a lot of painful Raven games there.
Oh, man.
It's like a Raven bar. I watched a lot of painful games there.
It was a good time, man. So, like, as we were kind of being more, as we grew up out of our mid-20s, being single, like, watching nothing but sports and just drinking with our friends, and we evolved into, you know, fathers and businessmen and not, you know, like just evolving. We both spent a lot of our formative years running around South LA, Inglewood, View Park. It was just kind of where we all came up. And it was like, as you kind of grow older, success somewhat can be measured geographically, like by where you live. Like, oh, I live in Beverly Hills now, or I live in West Hollywood. Like, that's like the measure for success. And as we were kind of growing, it was like, you know, becoming more intentional with our time and still having friends that lived in the community. It was like, yo, we're thinking about growing our business, but we're going into these areas that are highly competitive with like a disloyal customer base that's super expensive, and like started shifting, like if we were to start something new now, what would it be? How would it be reflective? And like for him, like, you know, my partner started off as a security guard at the parlor, worked his way up to manager. I met him as a manager, and then we found a way to buy it. Like, that's like it's like, for me, I look at him and this is what he loves to do. He breathes creating these amazing hospitality experiences. So I was like, yo, let's open a coffee shop. Like, actually, you introduced me to the space where we open our original coffee shop.
We're gonna go deeper.
Yeah, let's go.
And I was like, I don't know if this would work down here. And then a few years ago by, and we had the idea for Hilltop, which for those of you who don't know, is a mission-driven coffee shop. We opened our first location in August 2018. The idea was to kind of take this operational excellence that we built from like a hospitality management machine and expand it into something that was a little bit more intentional. And the idea was to create something, you know, like, in areas like this, historically, it's been mostly fast food options. And then there's like institution, mom and pop, some well-intentioned. But like, for the most part, there's not what you would see like on every corner in like Venice or West Hollywood or Silver Lake or more developed parts of town. And there's this exists everywhere. This is just LA specifically. So it's like, why don't we create something that is like, you know, knowing that there's a lot of creativity in this community that originates, a lot of entrepreneurship that originates here, a lot of culture that's created in these communities, but then it gets repackaged and rebranded, and the cool factor gets reattributed to people that didn't originate it. It's like, these are people that live, have to drive 30 minutes to go have a cup. What happens in a coffee shop? You facilitate connectivity, creativity, community, all of those things. It's like, the last thing LA needs is another coffee shop. What if we built something
that's a hub
on Slauson that represented the incumbent community that's been here for decades, that, you know, like, has the means to appreciate this experience? It just is not a primarily white community or affluent community, like, the way that you historically kind of look at it. So let's do our best to hire from the community. Let's teach people leadership through that entry-level employment. Let's like bring quality ingredients that we're all take for granted in other parts of the city here, intentionally. And the name, even Hilltop, originally it was like, what are we gonna call it? And it's on Overhill and Slauson, so we're on top of the hill. It's like, oh, we're on top of a hill, we should call it Hilltop. But then we built it into, like, you know, we kind of tied it into this idea of the climb. We're all climbing something. If there's all these things that, all these goals and obstacles that we all have or should have, that we need to do whatever we can to overcome to get to where we want to go, only to realize that, all right, next, right? It's like these miles, no destinations, only milestones type of vibe. So, I mean, we it's one of those things, like, from a creator standpoint, I count us all as creators. You make something from nothing, you're a creator. You don't have to be an artist or a musician or a director. You're making something from nothing. So, and it was one of those things, like, you think of entrepreneurship as an art. It's like what we envisioned in our head and what we wanted it to be. The final product ended up actually being that. Usually you have to make some creative compromise or pivot, or, you know, that doesn't make sense. This was exactly it. And a lot of people, fortunately for us, took notice and wanted to expand it. And one of those people was Issa Rae, who is from here, very much born, raised here, and does the better job out of anybody of putting on for where she's from and doing it on the highest level. And we just met, and it was like, you know, if I wasn't doing what I was doing, I'd probably be trying to open a coffee shop or working in a coffee shop, trying to make it. And so what it kind of symbolized. So we partnered up, had some other people, amazing people on board, folks like Bobby Wagner from the Seahawks, who's all about the DeAndre Hopkins, and a bunch of other, Spencer Paysinger, who's our boy, who lives in View Park. So it's all about.
Just tell me about Spencer Paysinger.
Oh, he was saying
we were just mentioning him.
Okay.
So we're here. So yeah, we're growing. We have three locations. We have three locations now. Got one in downtown Inglewood, which is our flagship, which we went all out on. Yeah, it's like, yo, I know it's Soho, a place like Soho House does for creative people, like, why don't we create that vibe here so people can come here and feel good and, like, you know, get something, leave people better than we found them. So we're building a brand on that, and we're excited. We got 3 locations now. We're opening our 4th one, and we're going for it. We're going for Starbucks next.
Congratulations. It's been inspirational throughout. It's been inspirational throughout.
I love that. I love
that. It's crazy how all of this, you know, continues to take shape. And, like, we built this holistic thing without knowing it, right? All of us, you know, that the way that we've come together through the lens of all of our different passions. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, down to, I used to live on Fuller. Like, when we first opened the shop on Fairfax, how we all met and came together, I used to live on Fuller and Melrose and go to the parlor before he owned it, right? Like, all the time, you know what I mean? And then when we linked and he told me that, and it was after y'all had actually purchased,
it's,
I believe, you know what I mean?
28. It's
pivotal. You know, these types of things, man, you know, and then to be able to introduce, you know, like, to keep all of that in mind, be super inspired by the journey that AJ and Yoni were on. And then, you know, I always was like, oh man, like, if there's anything I could ever do to assist, you know, we'd do it. But, like, to be even a tiny little part of their story and their journey is something that I, you know, you can't write it. And then to where we are now,
yeah,
right? Coming back around to certain things that we put in the air years and years ago.
They're happening.
It's just, yeah, that'll happen.
I'll say this is probably one of the most, like, fruitful friendships, I would say, that I, like, somebody that don't talk every day or, like, for a while, like, go months and months and months, and it's just all love. And it's like that, just planting the seed of something, I was like, this is never gonna work.
Right.
To, like, how that's kind of evolved, and now we got some stuff that we're actually, funny enough, you invited us here together because we're doing stuff together. That'll be, like, in a very, like,
and that's what we
not different from what you already did before on a different block. You know, like,
nah, real.
And
real.
We kind of recreate, so it's not a fluke. Yeah. We're not, like, you know, one take Drake over here.
And the importance of people having context.
Exactly, and it all, but also too, the importance of
context is everything.
All your relationships happen to be transactional at that point. Because again, like, same thing with, you know, myself and Diz and AJ, we can go months and months without, you know, speaking to each other, but that doesn't cheapen or lessen the relationship
ever.
And always at the top of the mind if there's opportunities.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we live in a society now, people have that, if you can't do something for me right now, then this doesn't really hold value.
Sure.
You know what I mean? And this is kind of a testament, not a kind of, this is a testament of that, because we all go back to different periods of time. I met AJ through Drama and D and Anna, and shout out them. Some of my greatest experiences came from that led to, you know, me getting a job at Puma and then me spending more time with Malik and then the record label and all those different things. Because, and I always tell people, like, you don't need to burn bridges if people do you wrong.
Right.
Just keep going, because they may be at an intersection in their life where their life is chaotic. They may be going through some things, but you never know. 10 years later, there may be an intersection for you guys.
Yeah, you gotta be gracious, you know? You gotta be
gracious.
You gotta have some grace. You gotta be gracious with yourself.
You gotta always have grace.
And be gracious with others, because everybody's on their own journey, and that journey has peaks and valleys and different avenues to understanding. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, what we may get at off the bat through the door, another person may have to go through some things to get. Yeah. You know what I mean? And you have to allow for that, because it ain't about, it's not about right now. It's not about the transaction, like you were saying. It's about what's enduring, you know, and what's endearing. And you just never know. Somebody that's going through something comes out on the other side incredibly, you know, evolved and beautiful. You know what I mean? And you could have cut that short by writing them off. You know what I mean? But at the same time, you're not giving yourself that same leeway to go through those experiences. Yeah. You know what I mean? And if we did that to each other, this stops. You know? Yeah. It just stops.
Yeah. How's fatherhood for you?
It's great. Giving gave me everything I got. You know, like, I met my wife doing, you know, feeding people. You know, like, we were doing
at hashtag lunch.
Yeah, she was, really? That's how we connected.
Okay,
and now we're married. and you have two kids.
That's beautiful.
They're healthy and they're funny and they're a little too smart for their own good, but it's healing, I would say.
Yeah.
You know, as I kind of
were you
like,
attracted because she wrote good notes? You know, in the lunch.
Very poetic. She has a way with words.
Okay.
No, she's just my kind of sarcasm, and, you know.
What a blessing.
Pretty.
It is, like man. Pretty.
Happy for you.
Thank you, man. Like, I mean, it's healing, right? Because it's like our story was very, you know, we met and moved pretty quick, and like the, you know, look, it's just going from that's the biggest change of your life, right? Being single, not even being married or in a relationship or whatever, but like creating life. You go back to creating. It's like you are responsible for putting a value add human into a crazy world, and giving them a better situation that you had, and giving yourself the grace to like you know it's fucking awesome.
It's
hard.
A phenomenal
it's
experience.
Exhausting. It's all those things, but it's like this is you're literally wearing your heart. You're watching your heart walk around the world, like outside of your body. When they do like dumb shit, you're like, oh man, that sucks. But you're learning, you know.
Right.
So it's
and
you get to teach them, and when you get to teach them, you get to learn. I'm like, I'm like a kid again. I don't know shit.
Right. It's crazy seeing somebody learning and doing things for the first time.
Yeah.
And even sometimes I forget, like, oh, this is her first time doing this.
Yeah.
and then it reels you back in. But I'm the same. Like we didn't grow up like with this marker of what a father should be, so you're really trying to figure it out, you know what I mean? And I think that's the beautiful part about it, and I think that is where your grace and giving yourself some leeway to make mistakes and go on that journey, you know. But it is, I agree, it's like it kicked in another lever for me, you know what I mean? Like now you're really responsible for somebody besides yourself, and all the decisions you make not only impact you, but your significant other, your wife, your family. So, you know, it helps guide those kind of steps, you know. But it also too is just beautiful to continue to learn, because, you know, every day I wake up and I'm like learning something new from somebody, and that's a journey that just continues to go. So
it's a beautiful transfer, right? It does. Yeah. There's no beginning and end to any of it.
Yeah.
You know, it's all energy that just transfers and recycles and regenerates, you know, and that's really what life is in so many ways, at least my understanding of it, you know?
The
parent thing is the most rewarding thing ever. It is also, it can be the most...
challenging.
It can be the most challenging because your children force you at every turn to say, hey, this is my first time on this journey. Cut me some slack. The moments where you want to just implode, you're like, I can't. That's counterproductive. And I'm going to alienate myself from you. And I don't want to do that. Just to share with y'all, so I have a dear friend of 30 years. His grandmother just passed this Sunday, 4:45 a.m. His grandmother's like a grandmother to me because I've been around him 30 years. The joyous thing about that was last Friday, last Saturday, and Sunday, everybody was present. Everybody came over to the house. East side of Long Beach on Easy. It was all of us. And it was, I mean, the house was packed.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And no one, you didn't have to worry about food or anything. Like, I called like, yo, I'm going to pick up a couple things from BevMo. Somebody's going to pick up chicken. Somebody's picking up tacos. But my point is like that woman who had spent 92 years on this planet, her legacy was on display. Because everybody who was there.
Yeah.
It wasn't even a question. It was like, I'm driving from Fresno, I'm driving from Sac, I'm driving from wherever I need to be. Babe needs to hear my voice. I want to FaceTime her. She couldn't hear us in the sense, and she was in the back, and we were all out front, and we were literally waiting for her to make her transition. But it was also, as much as it tugged at my heart, it was a celebration and a testament to the legacy she's created. And that actually made me, because I'm going through some things with my children. We all go through things with our kids, you know what I'm saying? But that moment was needed for me to see, because it brought me back to grace. And also, all right, this is challenging, but I at 90, I want you to be around my bed. Yeah. I want you to be mad and be like, I'll call that. Him. My I face, I want, you know what I mean? Sure. I want you to be like, yo, sure. I'm showing up. Mm-hmm. We gonna all be here. That thing was, because I've seen the other things like, oh, so-and-so passed. Oh, okay, that's cool. You know, not cool, but.
But no, but yeah.
You know, like, oh, okay, we'll move on. I'll see you at the funeral. No, that wasn't acceptable. Literally, that wasn't acceptable. It was like, we got to be here. Right. Because she took care of all of us. So I want to create, you know, I never thought about those kind of things. But, you know, now as you mature, And life takes you through all, you know, different parts of your journey. Again, service. Her service created that.
Yeah.
Created that that pool. That, yeah. that pool where we were all sitting there.
Sure.
It wasn't. It's like you said. Like that. That's what created it. It wasn't because she had money.
Right.
She was on a fixed income forever. She didn't have. You know, we ate some things that I would never eat again now. But at the time, this is what she could put on the plate, and it was
an impact.
It was an impact.
Said, whether they meet you in the gallery,
yeah,
or they meet you at the coffee shop, when people have pleasant interactions with people,
quality,
you will remember that
quality
forever.
Quality interaction.
You remember that forever.
That's it. I mean, you know, you were talking about that lighthouse, right? That North Star,
mm-hmm.
And that's it, right? That's the North Star is love. The North Star is putting out what you want to receive. You know, and letting that be, you know, we talk about equality, right? And that's what equality is. It's actually the golden rule. It's actually treating people how you want to be treated,
yeah.
And hoping that others do the same. Because if you do that, you have a true exchange of goodwill, of love, of things that generate rather than that take away or kill, you know? And that's how any of this moves in a real way of substance. You know,
okay.
What I mean? But without it, it becomes straight transaction. Mm-hmm. What can I get out of this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that one that somebody has to lose, you know. When in reality, this should be an existence where it's a value add for everyone. That everyone is able to continue on their journey in a way that they're gathering more, you know what I mean. But still, and able to give more mm-hmm. as a result of it. You know,
yes.
But if you know, they talk about, you know, Maya Angelou should say it, some people want gloves on both hands, right? You know, want to catch all the balls, don't want to throw anything back. And the game stops like that. You know what I mean? The game stops like
what
that.
What did I say? You want to go far, you go together.
You go together.
You want to go fast, you go alone.
That's it.
You know what I mean? AJ, where are you, Slauson and Co., Hilltop, hashtag lunch bag, just your life, the legacy you're building. Where are we taking people next? What are the things you're excited about?
Yeah, all of the above, right? I mean, I always look at, like, you know, when I think about how fortunate, like, again, in hindsight, I think about, like, the parlor we talked about. We were able to start hashtag lunch bag because we had access to
a
space like the parlor.
Yeah.
So if you like combine those two, then Hilltop. The idea for Slauson & Co. was birthed sitting inside of Hilltop, being reminded of a lot of these things. If you take all of the above and then merge it with Hilltop, then Slauson & Co. So for me, it's just doing my best to, like, you know, hold all these beach balls underwater and, like, stay cool on the surface and constantly reflect and make sure that the things that the beauty of doing things with intention is it creates a hell of a filter. Mm. Because the type of, you can't really do any of this shit by yourself, right? So you the people that you attract,
don't do none of this,
that's all of a function of who you're able to enroll to go on your journey with you. And when you're doing something for the long run and you're doing it for the right reasons, the people that aren't meant to be with you just fall off on their own. Yeah. And that's phenomenal. It's very efficient.
That's such a blessing.
Yeah, so it's like...
It's such a blessing.
It's, it's one day at a time, man. We're just trying to do everything that we said we were going to do. Yeah. So execution, build, execute, build, create. It's all... I'm very fortunate. Like, everything, I looked at everything through, like, the recycling symbol. It's like there's three different formulas. It's all the same shit that pulls everything, and it all feeds each other.
It's an ecosystem.
Yep.
So before we get to you, Diz, what's your sweet spot? Like, how do you, what do you look like when you disconnect? Do you meditate?
Yeah.
Is it running? Is it working out?
Like,
what's
your?
Everything. So like during the pandemic, when we couldn't go to a gym or do any kind of, I just picked up running. I hate running. But I just started running. That's all I did. Like Forrest Gump, just kept running. And it was just a way to, that's all this, I realized, I'm kind of going back to the thing that everything's all the same. Like I've become very big on meditating. Very big on, you know, just trying my best to disconnect from my phone. Being super intentional about, like, I just picked up yoga. That was something that I just recently picked up in the last 6 months when I just.
The hot joint or the regular joint?
Yeah.
The hot joint is crazy. Moto.
But I'm like, all right, maybe we'll go back. You know, so it's like, it's just taking care of yourself, man. Like your body, things that you eat, try not, you know, everything in moderation. And like, just, it's pretty simple. Yeah. You know, so like but the meditation thing has been big for me. You know, like,
Is there a certain type of meditation?
No, just, you know, I started, my on-ramp was at the apps. I used Headspace. And then I got to a point where I went on right before the pandemic, I went on a 10-day silent, it's called Vipassana. Right. I went on a 10-day silent, no human connection, no writing, no reading, no watching TV, just 18 waking hours or 20 waking, whatever it is.
What was this at?
There's these centers all over the world. I went to a place in like the boonies in Texas, Kaufman, Texas.
Where?
Kaufman, Texas.
Kaufman?
I was on a ranch for 10 days, just very.
Yeah, I remember I talked to you like.
I came back and I was just like.
I was amazed by that.
But it's great, you know, like the ability to.
Yeah, you got to pass that information.
If I could stick around, I might just meditate in the stadium just to say I did it.
You're just completely disconnected.
Disconnected.
Like, yeah, completely. Nothing.
And the wife
crazy
and the kids
thing was,
knew
we
prior.
Opened our Inglewood Hilltop store in the middle. That's when the final opening date started, and I couldn't even make it. I was like, I had this commitment for a year. I can't abandon my commitment to myself. This was like the biggest day of our young company's life, and I was like, I'm choosing to. I trust that everything will work out. And that was a big deal for me, because and then people were looking at me like, oh, you're not committed. I'm like, no, I'm committed, but I'm more committed to myself. Like, all the work is already done. I'm just showing up to take pictures and take credit for this. You know, that's not what it is.
Yo, that was a great bar. Abandoning commitment to self.
Yeah,
I think that we as a society, we like revel in that right now. Like, we commit to everything outside of ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Yeah. And that's where this unbalance takes place. And that's why we're moving the way we are. With that said, I'm optimistic that we all, including myself, will align. And look, kudos to you. That's great information. I'm definitely going to ask you about the Kaufman, Texas place.
Yeah.
Because I'm in need somewhere to go. And I can't do it at the house. That's never going to happen.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Like you said, it takes a huge, not a little bit, but a huge amount of trust in the people that are around you to be able to even relinquish that. And I think that's a lot of part, again, it comes back to human connection and
the human conditions.
Human condition, because, I mean, if you ask your friends and people around you how many people they genuinely trust that they can leave in the midst of, like, chaos or something as huge as opening a new business and then be able to not worry about that, most people be like, I might trust one person.
The percentage is super low.
It's crazy low.
That's low.
Yeah.
So that's a testament again.
It's also a testament to teams.
To the people you put around.
Yeah, but it's like, it's none of this. Like, you know, like none of the installation that you just installed was at any individual's. It starts with a vision.
Right.
But it's all about, that's all, I mean, it's it's all the same shit.
Listen, even if
the stadium process was an idea.
Even if it's outsourced, right, in the sense of people go do different things. Like today, I trust Mark Peace, you know what I mean, as the guy to come in, get the content, blah, blah, blah. We trust Robert. I trust my brother, like, for real. And it took a long time because I was a bit pessimistic. You know, we all bring our baggage in, sure, our former experiences, right? So, but the way him and his family have opened up to me and my door is open to him, it has allowed for the most healthiest business relationship that I've ever had. And so that's why we sit here.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean it's not without, you know, we don't have be like, yo, motherfucker, you know what I mean? Like, but it's, we know, we have context for each other, so, and we know, right, the core values and where we sit as men and as humans, which is key. So he knows, like, I know when he's like, yo, I really don't want to talk to you for today. He don't have to say it.
But you can
I just can tell in the text, like, oh, he ain't fucking with me right
sure,
now. You
sure,
know what
sure,
I mean?
Sure, sure.
And that's a great thing. The honesty of it. And that's what we need more of. Like, that's what, like, for people to stand in their truth. And while standing in your truth, you're still, like, again, you're showing grace and you're being nurturing, but you're also being true to self.
And you're valuing each other.
And that's, I mean, the value.
And that's the thing.
The,
you know,
value, yeah,
is
yeah,
that
yeah,
you,
yeah.
You actually understand that this person is important, right? It's not just
fucking important.
It's not just an avenue to get where you want to go.
No.
It's actually a part of getting there. You know what I mean? And that person, the better that you know someone, the more that you're going to get out of that experience, you know what I mean? Because you're able to operate and yeah, connect in ways that aren't simply, again, back that aren't simply transactional.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? The only way that we can do what we're doing here at SoFi Stadium is through, it took 2 years to get here, of getting to know each other, you know what I mean? And level setting and understanding what not only the value proposition of the project is, but what it means to each other and to people at yeah, large, you know what I mean? And what that does.
Yeah.
That only comes with time, and that only comes with having a bigger picture in mind.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Not just yeah, simply your own agenda.
Right.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And trust in the process. You know, it's for me, like, I always want to have, I want to have good experiences no matter what it is. So if it's business, I want to enjoy who I'm doing business with.
Right.
You know what I mean? I want to be able to build those
friendships. That's the only way you can win. Listen, championship teams, and speaking of, because while we, you know what I'm saying? Let's turn back here and look
one
at this.
One time.
This is because of everybody buying in.
Mm-hmm.
From the ownership to the general manager to the guys on the field to the training staff to the medical. If anybody is out of alignment, you don't win.
Right.
Trust me. It's not just the guys that are, you know, the guys that are in between the hash marks.
Mm-hmm.
The guys in between the hash marks are a product of people pouring into them.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
Like, we saw out here, like, with Odell. Odell's gone through a crazy couple years in Cleveland. Almost like when Randy Moss was playing for the Raiders and people, like, had written him off and da-da-da, this and that and the third. Yo, while we're speaking on things, we about to get some amazing
incredible
food. Sat in front
brother
of from an amazing
doing,
chef.
Hey, man. Yo. What's up, man?
Yo, because we got to nourish ourselves. What's up, King?
Appreciate you, brother.
Malik.
Good to see you, man. Hey.
Hey. Hey, it's a lot peace, going
man
on right
yo,
here.
Man.
AJ.
A lot more for you.
Come on, man.
AJ, man.
Thank
you,
man.
Too, man.
These brothers right here, man.
Yo,
but again.
Oh, yeah, it's about to be some real shit. Again, teams are everything. And I learned the hard way, because I was more someone that, I didn't come from like these communities up here, like, you know how the music business is, and in our industry, the whole medium is
appreciate
like,
you,
yo, you are you clicking with this person? Is this who your crew is and everything? I came sort of dolo. I came from Long Beach. I didn't have context.
Yeah.
And so, I've learned over the years how important team is. And that's taken me a long way. So again, to your point, it's all about advocacy, man. We gotta continue to advocate for one another. Even with AJ, like when I saw him at, I saw him over Super Bowl weekend, and I told him what I was doing, and he was like, yo, sounds dope. And that was it. Yeah. It was a couple of conversations, and we're sitting here, and you guys, as you know, your stature in our community, but otherwise is huge. So for you guys to be sitting here, this is advocacy. This is what advocacy looks like. This is another way of AJ and Slauson and Company investing in people, not monetarily, just with his time. And I appreciate that. I appreciate both of y'all. You, the collection, opening the doors to us.
Of course.
Continuing to sit and conversate. The brotherhood. I hope that, that's one of my biggest hopes, is that after the conclusion of the shows, these help us get back on track. Make sure we tap in with each other. Make sure we hug each other. Make sure, yo, I need to call you at 11 p.m. I'm going through some things. Like, that's the impetus for me.
That's it, man. Like, this, again, nothing moves without it. Nothing moves without community. Nothing moves without human connection. And, I mean, that's at the core of what we try to do with the exhibition, with the collection, is it ain't about the art. You know what I mean? It ain't about the finished product. It ain't about one person, singular, or anything like that. It's about illuminating the connections, the journey, the process, so that other people can understand the power in that, in their own journeys and process, and that nothing gets done by itself. You know what I mean? So, it's, you know, when we're taught history, right? You may be taught a figure in history, and it's taught individually, and so to the average person, they're like, wow, like there's no way I can match up, I can live up to that. You know what I mean? And, or to the average kid, right? You learn about Martin Luther King or, you know, someone, right? If he's only taught and the end result is only taught, then you think that that's some distant possibility, right? The change that was accomplished, the fight that took place. But when you understand that there was a whole ecosystem around him of people that loved him, that supported him, that inspired him, and vice versa, then it becomes doable. It becomes something that you see yourself in the process. When I learned about artist communities of the Harlem Renaissance, right? The visual artists, literary arts, da da da, and what it has become in terms of legend, you know what I mean? It, as far as the culturally significant era that it was and is, I was able to see myself in it. I was able to see us now, all of us and so many more, our community of brothers and sisters, as powerful, period. Mm. Like, okay, we're in the midst of this very thing right now. We're telling our stories. We are supporting each other. We're inspiring each other, right? And that's how you're able to then see what the possibilities are. But if you only have one example here, da, 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 but you don't get the fuller scope, it's a transaction.
It's a transaction. You know what
I mean? That's it. That's it. But I want to give a big shout to...
Yeah.
Yo, yeah, we need you to come over here. Chef, come over here real quick. Come behind us. Yeah. So listen, we've had a very nourishing conversation. Thanks for our soul. We also got the amazing Martin Spurlock.
Draylock,
who you may have seen on the documentary is
High on the Hog.
And he's given us, this is the nourishment. We about to get into this, y'all.
My name is Martin Draylock. I'm one of the chefs at Post and Beam in Crenshaw. We're making black eyed pea pancakes. So we have some, like, a black eyed pea mash, and we're just whipping up some egg whites to fold into that. We're gonna serve it with red pepper jelly and some fermented collard greens that are fermented kind of in the style of, like, sauerkraut. The other stuff that we're serving tonight is going to be our jerk marinated fried catfish. We're going to do some lamb head cheese, macaroni and cheese, collard greens, some vegan crab cakes, which are Post and Beam specialty, and some delicious pork chop with apple gastrique and some roasted apples.